presented by Pharma.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It is somehow Thursday, May 30th. We're almost halfway done with this year. Here is what's driving the day. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito declined calls for his recusal from January 6th related cases that are slated to come before the High Court soon, saying that the flag incidents you guys have all heard of were decisions made by his wife Martha Ann due to a, quote, very nasty neighborhood dispute, and that he wasn't involved. In a letter he sent to Congress, the justice said, quote, as soon as I saw it, I asked my wife to take it down, but for several days, she refused. He also added, my wife is fond of flying flags. I am not. I was not aware of any connection between this flag and the Stop the Steal movement, and neither was my wife. She did not fly it to associate herself with that or any other group. Alito's statement worked for former President Donald Trump, who posted a message of congratulations on Truth Social, commending Alito for showing the intelligence, courage, and guts to spurn the calls. Later in an appearance on Dan Bongino's show, Trump called Alito, quote, a tough guy, strong, and very, very smart. Also, in a very splashy rally in Philadelphia, the Biden-Harris campaign launched, quote, Black voters for Biden-Harris. In a rare joint appearance in front of Black voters in Philadelphia, both President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris laid out their own accomplishments on issues that disproportionately impact Black voters. But Biden also leveled his most concise attack about why he thinks his general election rival, President Trump, would be bad for Black voters. The campaign has boasted in the past that its investments in Black voter outreach is the earliest of any campaign in history, and over the next few months, the campaign is planning to invest eight figures into engagement with Black community groups, student groups, and faith-based organizations in battleground states, especially Philadelphia. Some of the challenges with Black voters have caused prominent Black officials and operatives to issue warnings to the campaign that the president's policy wins aren't resonating with Black voters, and he may lack the tools or the time to fix it. Driving the most frustration among some Black Democrats is the feeling that Biden does actually have a lot to toot his own horn about for the Black community. But in focus groups, Black voters say they aren't hearing anything about Biden's record from the campaign or the administration. The campaign seems to have gotten the message. Jury deliberations in Trump's hush money case started yesterday. We've already seen a few interesting developments. Joining me now to talk about what we saw, what it may mean, and what we can expect next is legal editor at Politico, James Ramoser. James, good morning.
Hello, Eugene. How are you?
I'm good. Maybe more well-rested than you and the fabulous people on your team, I would assume. Just a little bit, which is saying a lot, because we don't sleep a lot over here.
Well, it's my reporters who have had to face the burden of lining up at 3 a.m. to get in the courthouse each day. I have been doing that. So, you know, I may be well rested than they are.
That's a good editor, putting your reporters first. So for those people that maybe didn't watch like we did on the political screens in the office all day, what was happening or what we were waiting for to happen with the jury deliberations. They came out and asked for, like, they sent two notes to the judge. They had to come back out. I guess, first of all, explain what they were asking for from the judge when they brought out these two notes. Because I think, like, both of these could possibly be interesting. And then we'll get into any tea leaves that we can read from that.
Okay. So the first note that the jury sent to the judge essentially asked to review four segments of testimony that came out during the trial. And those excerpts of the testimony that they wanted to review more closely were testimony provided by two key prosecution witnesses, David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, and Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer, of course. The jury apparently was interested in those particular portions, not the entire testimony that each man gave, but specific subjects that they testified about. Just a few minutes after they submitted that first note, the jury sent forward a second note, which was also sort of interesting and also cryptic. And what that second note asked for was for the judge to rehash the jury instructions, the instructions about the law that the jury is supposed to use during its deliberations. Now, it's not quite clear if the jury wants the judge to repeat the entire hour-long instruction or if they're interested in particular parts of the instruction. We're going to find out more about that this morning. But that could potentially be, it's in the eye of the beholder, but it could potentially be a positive sign for Trump, because a lot of those instructions are about the nature of reasonable doubt, the importance of being impartial, and that kind of thing. Somewhat defendant favorable instructions. And so if the jury is taking those instructions seriously or wants to think more about them, think more closely about them, it's at least a sign that this is not a slam dunk case for this jury. They're taking it quite seriously. They're going to continue cogitating on this quite closely.
James, it is the year of our Lord Beyonce 2024. Why the hell are juries still having to be told things multiple times out loud instead of getting it written down so they can look at in the back? Why are they not given full transcripts of these testimonies from these key witnesses? Like, it seems, I'm not a lawyer. I wanted to be when I was a kid. It didn't work out. But I don't understand why they're not getting these things and already having these things in the back. And I think a lot of people were confused about that today.
Yeah, you could make an argument that the jury should just have, you know, a full roster of the entire transcripts of the 5 weeks of testimony that they heard for them to sort of comb through at will. I think that it's kind of an old school, old fashioned court rule, and there's a belief that they want the jurors talking to each other and sort of not feeling tied to written records. They don't want juries spending hours and hours parsing through written transcripts. So they're allowed to ask for specific areas that they're interested in, but they have to ask. And they'll get what they're interested in. They'll get those excerpts either in the form of a transcript, or they might actually have those excerpts read aloud to them by a court reporter this morning. We're not exactly sure how that's going to work. But this is sort of just an old school courtroom procedure about how most juries work. And that's what New York is using here.
Yeah. Okay. So the most important and probably annoying question for someone like you, who is like, just wait a few days until we get the damn verdict. We're not getting a lot of news out of this until we get the verdict. So did the notes and what they asked for tell us anything at all about what those conversations might be like behind closed doors?
Yeah, they're a little bit of a Rorschach test, you know, as always in these jury deliberations. These notes are common. They're often quite cryptic. They often can provide some glimmer of at least the areas that the jurors are interested in, but you can't read too much into them. There could just be a single juror who's interested in these excerpts, and that juror wants them, but the rest of the jury is thinking about something completely different. So lots of grains of salt. However, it is a very tentative positive sign for prosecutors, at least in this first note, because the key excerpts that the jury has asked for were testimony from two central prosecution witnesses. And the request came just a day after prosecutor Joshua Steinglass urged jurors in his closing argument to focus on those two very witnesses, including some of the very testimony that they asked about. And so if I were a prosecutor, I would be at least mildly pleased that they're asking to see those excerpts as opposed to something else.
James, thank you so much for joining. You take care.
Thanks, Eugene. Bye.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are out. Lucky them. President Biden will be heading to Rehoboth Beach today, and Vice President Kamala Harris will be giving the commencement speech at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.
The 340B drug pricing program is supposed to help vulnerable patients access medicines at qualifying hospitals and clinics. It's meant to be a safety net for those who really need it. Instead, 340B is padding the profits of PBMs, chain pharmacies, and big hospitals. Let's fix 340B so it can help the patients that need it most. Visit phrma.org/340B to learn more.